This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Visit FUBARradio.com for more details.
Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
It's FUBAR Radio, it's 12 a.m. and in two shakes of a lamb's tail, we will be eating the news in celebration of the great, great nation of France. We'll kick off with a bit of Jay-Z and Paris.
We're going to skate to one song only.
So I ball so hard, motherfuckers wanna find me. First niggas gotta find me. What's 50 grand to a motherfucker like me? Can you please remind me? Ball so hard, this shit crazy. Y'all don't know that, don't shit phase. And as we go, 0 for 82, when I look at you like this shit gravy. Ball so hard, this shit weird. We ain't even Pope be here. Ball so hard, since we here, it's only right that we be fair. Psycho, I'm LIBO, to go Michael. Take your pick, Jackson, Tyson, Jordan, game six. Ball so hard, got a broke clock. Rollies that don't tick-tock. All the Mars that's losing time, hidden behind all these big rocks. Ball so hard, I'm shocked too. I'm supposed to be locked up too. You escape, but I escape. You be in Paris getting fucked up too. Ball so hard, let's get faded. Labyrinth for like 6 days. Gold bottles, skull models, spilling ace on my sick J's. Ball so hard, bitch behave. Just might let you meet gay. Shot-towns, B-Rolls, moving the next BK. Ball so hard, motherfuckers wanna find me.
That shit crazy. That shit crack. That shit crack.
Ball so hard, motherfuckers wanna find me.
That shit crack. That shit crack. That shit crack. She said, yeah, can we get married at the mall? I said, look, you need to crawl for your ball. Come and meet me in the bathroom style and show me why you deserve to have it all.
Ball so hard,
that she cray,
that she cray.
Ain't it Jay?
Ball so hard,
what she order?
What she order?
Fish fillet.
Ball so hard,
yo whip so cold,
so cold.
This whole thing.
Ball so hard.
Like you ever be around motherfuckers like this again. Who's your girl? Grab her hand. Fuck that bitch, she don't wanna dance. She's my friends, but I'm in France. I'm just saying, Prince Williams ain't do it right if you ask me. Cause I was him, I would've
married Kate and Ashley.
Was Gucci my nigga? Was Louis my killer? Was drugs my dealer? What's that jacket, Margiela? Doctors say I'm the illest, cause I'm suffering from realness. Got my niggas in Paris, and they going gorillas, huh?
I don't even know what that means.
No one knows what it means, but it's provocative.
No, it's not. It
gets the people going.
Ball so hard, motherfuckers wanna find me. Ball so hard, motherfuckers wanna find me.
In the throne, don't let me get in my zone. Don't let me get in my zone. Don't let me get in my zone. These other niggas is lying, acting like the summer ain't mine.
I got that hot bitch in my home.
You know how many hot bitches I own. Don't let me get in my zone. 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 The stars is in the building, they hands to the ceiling. I know I'm about to kill it. How you know I got that feeling? You are now watching the throne. Don't let me into my zone. Don't let me into my zone. I'm definitely in my zone.
Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
Yes, indeed. I am indeed Mark Dolan. This is Mark Dolan Eats the News. A look back at the week's big stories seen through the lens of hilarity. Now, that's a bit tricky this week because there's only one story and we're not feeling very hilarious about it. Now, the show normally starts with a topical monologue, which usually involves calling David Cameron an idiot and Jeremy Corbyn just strange. I mean, Jeremy Corbyn is like a bad dream the Labour Party can't wake up from. But this isn't the time for that. For 1 week only, A, we're going to be quite nice. And we're going to dispense with lacerating satire, easy for you to say, and simply start the show with this, which is the 10 things we love most about France. So here we go. Number one, the humble croissant. We know they're very fatty. If you eat three in a row, you will definitely die. But the things that can hurt you are fabulous in small portions. Number two in the list of things we love most about France, Juliette Binoche. Just well done, France. Well done. Number three, the multi-layered patisserie joy of Millefeuille. If you don't know it, Google it and then eat it. For more details on it, see croissant. Number four, the fact that the French invented the idea of having an affair. Basically, if you don't have a mistress in France, that's a bit gay. Number five, Gérard Depardieu. And whenever he gets drunk and goes on an aeroplane. As far as I'm concerned, if you're Gérard Depardieu, you're allowed to piss in a bottle at 38,000 feet. Number six, Charles de Gaulle, not just an airport with some seriously good shops in it, a politician of decency, honour and vision who helped shape the modern France we now know and love. That bit was a bit serious, wasn't it? But, you know, that's how we roll. Number seven, the song Jolle Taxi. Now, admittedly, Vanessa Paradis is not exactly the Beatles, but then again, I'd much rather have her babysitting my kids than Paul McCartney. There was a subset to that one, which was French au pairs, but I didn't want to seem misogynistic, so I didn't do it. Number seven, wine, cheese, bread, in particular, baguette. Number eight, I know it's a cliche, but hey, it's a cliche for a reason. The Eiffel Tower, Le Tour d'Eiffel, which, by the way, was hated when it first went up. Hashtag just saying. Number nine, the fact that they get quite cross if you don't have a three-course sit-down meal for lunch. They actually get shitty about it. You're very huffy. A lot of tutting. And finally, at number 10, the top 10 things we most love about La Belle France, Paris. Paris, P-A-R-I-S, Paris. La Grande Ville, let's be clear about this, the most beautiful romantic city on the planet. So jaw-droppingly stunning, it makes Venice look like Birmingham. France, we love you. Let's start the show.
Rob Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio.
Yes, indeed, it's 12.08. It's Mark Dolan eats the news on FUBAR Radio, the UK's largest ad-free online radio station. With me to digest what has been a very difficult and challenging week for all of humanity are the following people. We have freelance journalist John Reynolds. Welcome to FUBAR, sir.
Nice to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Well, it's thrilling to have an actual proper person with a discernible skill, an actual career. And then you've got Stephen Bailey. But you know, the thing about you,
that's
Stephen...
That's out of order.
No, yeah, but you actually have a job title, because you know what happens when people give you, like, their card. I don't know, imagine if you've got a card or not, right?
I do. It says Cheryl Cole's number one fan. It's very old.
That's quality. Yeah. That's quality. But well, I know that John Reynolds, it will say freelance journalist, writer, author, thinker, man about town.
I think. I travel towns.
But I've got a job title for you.
Oh, great.
Okay, for your mythical business card, it just says Stephen Bailey dash fabulous.
Right? I'll take
it. And that's it. It's not even a noun. Your job is an adjective.
It's just what I am.
Yes, you are.
It's who I am.
And do you know what I am? I'm just here.
Yeah. Well, someone has to be, Mark.
Someone's got to be.
Someone's got to report the news.
And I'm thrilled about it because we have 50 minutes in which to go through the big stories of the week. There's obviously, John, only one story in town. We will come to some other stuff because I don't want, you know, the truth is that venerable news publications, broadcasters across the globe have been already digesting this and analysing it, and I don't want to kind of just repeat what they're doing, really, because that's not why we're here, that's not why this show exists. However, we also can't not talk about it because it's the only story in town. It's just, well, here's the first question, really. Are we making this story bigger than it actually is, or are we really looking at a kind of defining moment in international affairs?
I think the latter, to be honest. I mean, if you compare the attacks in Paris which happened on Friday, I think it's different if you compare them to what happened with the attacks on Charlie Hebdo, which were on a group of journalists, which you could argue the journalists actually provoked Muslims with their parody cartoons.
Sure.
But the attacks on Friday were of people who were out eating in restaurants, out at the out at a gig too. So I think there's a lot of empathy from people in the UK.
Yeah.
This could have been easily them, basically. I think it's interesting if you look at the front page of a Daily Mail this morning, they did a poll and 60% of the people said that they would now advocate for the UK to actually begin bombing Syria and be aligned with the French people too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I suppose what I'm worried about, we're all absolutely devastated at what happened in France. We have a unique special relationship with France. In the last 100 years, France has always been our major ally. We've helped each other out, seen off Hitler and the rest of it. And so there is that sort of sense of a connection with the French people that we have. But haven't we been here before of an emotional reaction to a terrorist attack, which then creates a whole load of other problems? I mean, you know, do you really want to kind of just bomb Syria out of anger?
No, maybe not. But I mean, I guess irrespective if we bomb them or not, I mean, there was security chiefs, I think last week, were saying there's 450 jihadis on the loose in the UK. So even if we don't respond, the likelihood is that there could be an attack at some point anyway, I would have thought.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Stephen, look, this is, as a stand-up comedian, you're probably not going to be doing a sort of your Club 20. You're not going to be touching too much on the threat of ISIL and those attacks in France. Well, no one, you know, wants to talk about that in a comedic environment.
No.
However, it's still something that as a human being you couldn't really avoid, could you?
No, I feel like I'm on it more because I'm not very politically minded in the slightest. So I feel like I am the one coming in from like the emotional. It just makes me sad. Like,
yeah.
I don't really have a really strong, like, I'm not, I just, should we be bombing Syria? My answer's no, because I just get, I don't like the word bombing.
Yeah,
like, and
yeah,
it's
yeah.
as simple as that. Like, it you only me like out.
You
like,
only like you only like love bombing.
I love a love bomb.
What you want to do is send troops in to hug everyone.
Yeah, I mean, or to hug me. Listen,
yeah. Start with you.
I'm willing to go and just hug the troops while they bomb.
But the bottom line is that while David Cameron struggled for a mandate to attack Syria in the last parliament, when the leader of the opposition was Ed Miliband, who mobilized. Votes against the government, and it was thrown out, wasn't it? The government were defeated.
Yeah.
Does that start to look like quite a bad legacy of Ed Miliband's, do you think?
I think so, and I think it'd be difficult for him to get a mandate to do it now, with particularly Jeremy Corbyn, who's the leader of the Labour Party and is obviously a pacifist.
Yeah.
So if the Labour Party towing line behind Jeremy Corbyn, then it would be difficult for him to get a majority in the Commons to pass it again to bomb Syria, I would have thought.
Yeah, so what's your gut? I mean, do you think Cameron really wants to do it, and do you think he will force it through?
I think he wants to do it, and I think he probably will end up forcing it through by hook or by crook. I don't know how he'll, you know, manage to do it, but I think that'll be the overall aim he'll try and do.
Is there not a suspicion that we have been spared an attack hitherto because of a less proactive role in the Syrian conflict? You know, have we been the beneficiaries of a more pacifist tone?
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that. I think with the attacks last week in Paris on Friday, some of the bombers said, didn't they, this is a response to Syria, basically.
Yeah,
so they overtly said that. So I think there'll be the public opinion in the UK, maybe if we keep out, then there won't be a reaction, or won't be a response from these jihadists.
But the bottom line is, your argument is that there's a lot of people who are embedded in this country, who hate this country, hate the values it stands for, and that an attack can come anyway, irrespective of what the foreign policy is, in fact.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think that to the extent there's a smaller Muslim community overall in the UK than there is to France. And I think that France has had a lot more problems with the Muslim community, or parts of it, are a lot more dispossessed in France than they are in the UK, I would have thought.
Well, that's right. I mean, this is the feeling that one has when you go to France. Is it's a magnificent society, incredibly civilized society, given the world so much, but it doesn't seem an entirely integrated society in the way that Britain maybe it has always been shaped by immigration, and therefore is a more tolerant place. Do you have that feeling about France?
Yeah, particularly in Paris and in parts around the cities. If you go to places like Marseille, there's a lot of there's pockets of unrest, and you get, you know, communities actually railing against local governments in cities and things like that. So I don't think it's not as seamless and integrated as it is in the UK.
Yeah, I mean, how do you see this one playing out? Do you think ultimately that there will be a bit of military might, and that ISIL, at least for the time being, in the short and medium term, will be slowed down?
I don't know about that. I mean, slowed down. I mean, it'd be interesting to see. They seem to be more proactive, and they seem to have sort of changed the game, don't they? I mean, you've got to think about the Russian airplane disaster too. I mean, they seem to be taking on all targets now, whether it's planes or it's restaurants and it's concert halls too.
Yeah, for sure. I tell you what's come out of it, Stephen. Don't worry, yeah. I'm not going to ask you about airstrikes.
Oh no!
But listen, yeah. It's been a week. Where, as I said, even if you're not interested in politics, you can't avoid it. You, I'm sure you've had conversations about it.
So many.
And I wonder whether what it has shown us is it's shown us the worst and best of humanity. I mean, but just on the kind of positive side of it, the reaction of really the Western world to what happened in Paris, the reaction of the Brits. There was the friendly international earlier in the week between, I mean, what the timing, you couldn't make it up, England playing France in a friendly at Wembley.
Yeah.
And I've got to say, I had a tear to the eye when I was walking past a pub on the way to a gig.
Yeah.
And I just looked through the glass and I could see the game on, and Wembley Stadium, the arch was lit up with the tricolour. And it just made, you know what I mean, it just made me tearful.
I
really
have liked that, like everyone on like Facebook with the flags and things.
Have you
like,
done that?
I've not done it.
No, you haven't.
No.
Although you have, it's worth, because it's radio, worth pointing out, you've got the French flag painted on your face.
Exactly.
Please tell
you.
Me it's
I
not
go around like this.
And the problem is, because you're so big into commitment, it's actually a tattoo,
well,
isn't
I'm
it?
Not That's me, you know, and I've got it on my ass cheeks.
It's got to be done.
Private moments. Always show solidarity.
I'm sure that's definitely one of the things you show on a regular basis.
I think we've just taken this really serious topic down an anal route.
Well, it's inevitable, but we have to do that because actually, you know, according to the Mail Online, defiant Parisians share messages of love, compassion and solidarity in a poignant video in the wake of the terrorist attacks. Social media has just been all behind sort of France and what they've gone through. It's a very, very unique country with extraordinary history. And I think we make, you know, historically, we've always had a slightly cantankerous relationship with the French, haven't we? But this is a moment for us to go. It's a little bit like siblings. It's like you're my best friend and my worst enemy. It's sort of a love hate. And at the moment, the Brits are feeling a lot of love towards the French, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, have you guys had seminal times in, that was very badly worded for Stephen, have you had special times in France? Because Paris is a city which changed my life, because when I was 16, I spent 6 weeks there in a kind of, on a language course, and I stayed with a family. And my dad, incredibly generously, forked out the cash for me to go there and do, it was quite a commitment, quite an investment, but it changed my life because I spent 6 weeks in this romantic, liberal, cultural city by myself, and I just you know, there's something very magical about Paris, and the French people are amazing. They're so intellectual. Every lunch I would have lunch with this family, and it was like international affairs or poetry or politics, something that, you know. So Paris has got a special place in my heart, and I think we've all just remembered again. It's like, oh my god, I love Paris.
I found my first love in Nice, south of France.
Amazing.
Years ago.
Amazing.
I had my first girlfriend in Paris. That's right, girlfriend. So that, I was 13.
The French women are so hot, they can even make Stephen Bailey straight.
Exactly. I did, but I had a French girlfriend. And I think...
She obviously liked a challenge.
She did. Well, I mean, I think we only lasted about 10 minutes. Her name was Lindsay, actually, Mark. Ooh. But also, don't you just think... Whenever I think of Paris, I just think of magic. I do. I really feel like if I hate the world, if I look at pictures of Paris,
make it all right.
I'm like, it's so beautiful.
I think that's right, and it's beautiful, and it's somehow what it stands for. As I say, it's cultural, it's intellectual, it's gastronomic, isn't it?
I like the romance, because I feel like romance has died a bit, but I feel like in Paris it never dies. Like, I think it's really nice.
It never dies. So tell us about this chick in Nice. Is she now Mrs. Reynolds?
This was a long time ago.
I would say Madame Reynolds, but that makes it sound like a hooker.
Up some wounds here, yeah, Mark.
I don't want to talk about it. It was a short-term relationship. I do remember seeing her and watching a lot of French films of the 1960s. Obviously, this wasn't in the 60s. I think this was in the early 90s.
There you go. All right. Well, if you'd like to contribute to this conversation, it's a French love in. What do you love about France? We've had our top 10 list, but what do you think? At FUBAR Radio, Dolan at FUBARradio.com. We will move on from that now because we have an awful lot of other big stories to get through, including a new sandwich from Tesco, which is called, of course, a social media storm. We'll come to that after a little bit of Vanessa parody, because Nat has put together a French, all French playlist today, and this is Joe le Taxi.
Babes.
Bienvenue, c'est Joe.
What a tune, Joe le Taxi. I've just been Google imaging Vanessa parody and I found it really distracting. So I'm going to switch off my computer now and welcome back to the studio John Reynolds and Stephen Bailey.
I'm out.
Journalist and comedian in that order. Do you have any comedic shows that you'd like to publicise at the moment? Because your Twitter handle is well worth following.
Oh, yes.
You're very amusing on the social media.
I can highly recommend it. I always moan or always flirt with men that don't want to be flirted with.
Yes.
But do follow me on at Stephen Comedy. And I'm doing a preview of my new show, actually, on the 1st of December at the Backyard Comedy Club. And it's called Stephen Bailey Nation's Sweetheart. And it's about how I should be very famous.
Well, that's brilliant. It is almost a certainty. I can guarantee it.
Well,
I mean, that's a lovely early Christmas present for audiences.
Ah, thanks, Mark. Especially if you love an inappropriate joke or two.
That's great. And, John, you write for a variety of publications.
Yes.
And do you have anything currently specifically that we need to know about? And also, do you use social media as well? Can you be found on the social media?
I can. I'm at John Eddie Reynolds, and I write. I'm a freelancer, so I write at the Mirror and the Times and a few other newspapers.
Brilliant.
But now, I'm available for commissions too.
Well, this is good to know. How does the catering vary from the Mirror to let's say the Times? Do you get? I mean, better.
I bet
snack?
The Times is.
Tell
good.
Me about the. I would imagine the Times. Does someone go around with a trolley at four with cakes on it?
I used to work, the best I've had is I used to work at the Guardian, and at the Guardian they actually have a carvery.
A carvery?
Yeah.
That's
a, like a little, my favourite
like
thing.
Like a sort of Toby concession
carvery.
In the office.
I like the cheapest, the better, like a $3.99 all-you-can-eat carvery. And so was it like all-you-can-eat buffet carvery, or did they just come with like a roast dinner on a plate?
So they actually cut the chicken in front of you. So that's at the top end of stuff, and then I've worked at the Express, where it's just a simple, humble little cafe, basically.
Yeah,
so
basically, I've been to the Express. It's a bowl of gruel.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
On good days.
They actually have Dickensian food there, but not in a kind of retro way, just because of the budget. But listen, but do you know what? We actually love the Express, and we love OK Online, who are very good friends of this show and of Hot Gossip with Lizzie Cundy and Jonathan Bowne. Jonathan Bowne is the head of digital there.
Jonathan Bowne is sexy, I will tell you that for free.
There you go. And you can catch him and Lizzie every Thursday at 10 a.m. Now look, that's enough plugging other people's shows. We've got work to do. Is this the end of days? Asks social media. Tesco forced to defend its new Christmas chocolate and cherry sandwich. Yes, you heard me right. They've brought out a sandwich which has got chocolate and cherry in it. And knowing Tesco, I wouldn't be surprised if there's just like bits of horse in there as well. But for all we know, it's an incredibly sort of confectionery based sandwich, but it sits alongside your prawn mayo and your cheese ploughmans. Here's my question, John. In the light of tumbling profits, losses running into the hundreds of millions, one awful piece PR story after another, is this a new low for Tesco? Hashtag, what were they thinking?
It sounds awful, doesn't it? I mean, the sandwich itself sounds awful, but I mean, I don't think, as you say, Tesco's just tumbled from one bad, you know, bad thing from the others. But I don't think it compares to the its previous problems. As you mentioned, they had the horse meat scandal, they've been losing share to the discounts to Lidl and Aldi.
Yeah.
They've basically, they've had so many, and then they had the accounting scandal. So they had problems with the books over the past 2 years.
They've had mice in their branches, which I don't think you're supposed to have. It's not like that's another new quirky offering that they've come up with. It's bad.
It's bad. And I think that what they're trying to do, because I mean, Tesco sort of 10 years ago was a market leading company. Everyone saw it as something that was particularly good about being British, and it seems to have lost its way, basically.
Yeah.
I think what they're trying to do now is trying to go back to what made it good in the first place, which is selling food, basically. I think they got a bit sidetracked. They moved into technology.
Yeah.
They started selling tablets, and they sort of bought into restaurant chains and things like that. So they're trying to move back to what made them good in the first place. But I mean, this is a PR disaster for today. I don't think it's a sort of a long term.
What's ironic about it is it's a PR disaster based on what was probably a PR stunt. I've been to enough. I've done enough corporate gigs to know that this sandwich will be off the back of a series of meetings at Tesco HQ. Blue sky. How can we make a stir? I know. Let's have a chocolate and cherry sandwich. But what I don't like about it is the message is that I don't think you love your customers if you'll sell them this crap.
That's,
do you know what I mean? Am I taking this way too seriously?
If I ran Tesco,
I wouldn't want my customers eating a chocolate and cherry sandwich.
But why?
Because it's crap.
But have you tried it?
Well, I'm sure it tastes all right, but there's zero nutrition
Here's
in it.
Here's the thing, though, isn't it? Like, some people have like peanut butter on a sandwich, and I think that's pretty disgusting.
Mm.
But you know,
listen, I don't want to get Gillian McKeith with you, but I can tell you that peanut butter is packed with a lot of essential minerals and it's very protein rich.
Okay, but I would just like to
cherries and chocolate spread.
Okay, but we've all had worse than a chocolate and cherry sandwich in our mouth. Okay,
I got to say, I'm going to break the fourth wall and say that when Stephen Bailey arrived here today in an Uber taxi, that you announced, you gaily announced that you had a hangover.
Yes,
and I must say the only.
I would eat that on a hangover.
That's it. It's the one sort of thing I can accept about the sandwich. One
and
redeeming
I'd put cheese
feature.
And onion crisps in it. I'd go as far as that. Judge me now, boys. Judge me now.
I'd forgotten you were northern. Okay. So segueing from Tesco. Well, you know what? We'll let the audience decide on that one. Would you eat this sandwich? Speaking of the high street and us being consumers, bad news for the pubs of this country. It really is closing time now. say the Mail Online. Four pubs are shutting every day in the UK, the highest rate for more than 100 years. Yes, four pubs are closing every day in the UK, marking the highest closure since 1904. When 10% of pubs were forced to shut their doors by law. The majority of closed pubs are converted for residential or commercial use. The Lost Pubs Project says that while there are around 48,000 pubs in England today, they've identified more than 29,000 lost or closed pubs. The Campaign for Ill Health backs up the findings with figures showing about 29 premises a week are ceasing to be public houses. Earlier this month, JD Weatherspoon revealed it had put 34 of its pubs with an estimated value of £40 million up for sale and blamed the impact of George Osborne's living wage. This is bad news, isn't it? Because our network of pubs, Stephen, are... Yeah. I mean, in a way, they're like the modern-day churches, because in the old days, you'd have a church at the end of every street, yeah. And that was like a kind of communal hub. Now, the equivalent is pubs now, and when a pub ceases to be a pub and becomes a block of flats, it's gone forever.
I think it's sad, because I remember, like, when I was growing up, like, where I live in Manchester, it's like a little council estate thing, and there's only one pub, and everyone would go to that pub, and everyone knows everyone there. I think we've kind of lost the kind of the art of the local.
Yeah.
Like, I used to love the local. Like, we would go in on Thursdays for a pub quiz. You'd go Friday and Saturday before you went into town and have a few drinks there.
You'd go in Monday because to celebrate it's Monday.
Just celebrate it's Monday. Sunday is like for your hangover carvery.
Yeah.
Basically, you could just go in any day if you were bored. It's like, where'd you go? Let's just go to the windmill on the corner. Like, you would just do stuff like that. And I think it's because we've lost the art of the local. But I am shocked at the Weatherspoons thing because I'm obsessed with Weatherspoons.
Well, I agree. They're much maligned, but they're actually brilliant, aren't
they're
they?
They're brilliant. Like, you can get, like, a burger and a beer.
Good value.
For £4-ish.
Correct. are you a frequenter of pubs, John? As a journalist, it kind of goes to the territory, doesn't it?
It does go hand in hand. I think there's two things happening. I mean, it's hot back to the smoking ban, too, which obviously had an impact in pubs. But if you go to a lot of pubs today, I think you see people drinking less, and you see more people drinking less alcohol. Yeah. You see people in there on laptops drinking tea and coffee.
You said that. You said that with disgust.
With disdain, yeah.
Yeah, you did, actually. There was rage in your eyes. It's true. The Starbucks next door to the pub is fuller at 7 o'clock in the evening now.
Yeah, that's a good point.
What do you think it is, though? Do you think it's in bigger cities, like, rather than... Because I feel like that my local near my parents' house is still really busy. Mm. But do you think because in, like, a big city, it's like if you were in London, you've got, like, bars and...
More just choice.
More choice, yeah.
I think so. And I think that habits have changed. And we've also had, you know, the biggest economic downturn since the Second World War. So people have been hit
people
for six financially, yeah. And the problem, what's always bad about recessions is that it's not just that people stop going out and spending money. It changes habits for a generation. And so, once the economy recovers, people aren't suddenly going back to the pub and spending 50, 60 quid a night across the bar like maybe they used to before it went wrong. And I think, it's well reported that people will go to their supermarket, stock up with a box of... I mean, it's ridiculous how much beer you can buy cheaply in a big supermarket. They drink indoors, don't they? Their habits are different. As you say, they're also being told that they need to cut back. So I think alcohol consumption is actually going down. So
mine last night disproves that.
Yes.
Okay.
You're actually propping up the alcohol figures in this country.
I've been sick twice this week because of alcohol.
I wonder whether, just in the last week, you've probably saved about four pubs yourself.
I think I have. I think I own a Weatherspoons right now. I think it's really sad, though. Because as well, like, do you know what I find really funny? The Queen Vic, the Woolpack, and the Rovers are all doing very well.
Yeah, what's that all about?
Yeah, like, they're always seem very busy.
Eventually, they're going to sort of have to just retire the Queen Vic, aren't they? And put it in mothballs and have just a really big Costa instead.
And also, I mean, just as a quick side note, I don't know how all those people live in Walford. And they only work on a market stall. Like, I don't know how that happens.
Yes, they're all in three-bedroom Victorian houses.
Yeah, I rent a room and do a proper job, and I can't.
Now, I think there's an important cultural significance to pubs as well, because it's not just a hub of the community and gets people together, but the music scene and the comedy scene owe a lot to our network of pubs across the country, because most Victorian pubs were purpose-built and came with an extra room upstairs or next door, which would be called a function room, which was built into the business model of any pub so that you could hire it out for events. I mean, back in the day, people used to have meetings and stuff like that. You know, politics groups would get together and, of course, weddings and all that sort of stuff, funeral wakes.
I used to love a wake at the local.
Well, it's brilliant. So the architecture of pubs has actually had a cultural role, because what's then happened is that in the sort of 60s, 70s and 80s, bands have performed in these function rooms and comedy gigs have happened. And that's where all of that music sprouted from, whether it's Bowie or the Beatles or Oasis or any number of, you know, all of those people made their careers in pubs. That's where they got spotted and that's where they found an audience.
I think the football's a big help, isn't it? People tend to like to watch the football in pubs too. That's sort of a communal thing. I think if it didn't for the football, that could even hit the pubs even harder, I would have thought.
Yeah. I should put my cards on the table and say that my father was a licensee for the best part of four decades at an excellent pub in leafy northwest London called Sir Robert Peel. And so therefore, I'm an extra lover of pubs. It's my childhood, you know, having... living above a pub, it was the most exciting, diverting experience you can have as a child. I was never bored. Because if I was summer holidays, I'd bored just go downstairs and chat with the customers.
But do you not remember as well, like, because my parents always go to the pub on Christmas Day while the turkey's cooking.
Yeah.
Like, the people don't really do that anymore, do they?
No.
Like, people don't do anything.
Go to Starbucks instead.
I think the sense of community has gone right downhill, to be quite honest.
Well, there you go. Well, you guys can do your bit by working out what your local is, where it is,
and going
there tonight and having a couple of bubbly real ales, and that's how you can do it. You can vote with your feet. You're listening to Mark Dolan Eats the News in the company of John Reynolds and Stephen Bailey.
Mark Dolan Eats the News on FUBAR Radio.
Now, a couple of big stories of the week. Women will not earn the same as men for 50 years. Warning over painstakingly slow progress on the gender pay gap. Yes, the gender pay gap for full-time workers has fallen by just 0.2% to 9.4%. For all employees, the gap remained unchanged at 19.2% compared to 2014. Unions warn at this rate it will take half a century to secure equal pay. John, I don't understand it. I cannot understand and fathom why women aren't paid the same as men these days. What's going on?
No, there is still a deficit, but inroads are being made. If you look at sort of the big companies, the FTSE 100 companies now, I think there's more women on boards. There's more women chief executives. I'm trying to think about my own profession too, in journalism. I mean, there's women editors, maybe more women editors. I think women do have more high-profile jobs than they did, say, 15 or 20 years ago. But there is still the... In terms of pay, there is still a gap. There's a big deficit between what they and men are paid.
Yeah, it's really strange. Stephen, on the comedy circuit, it's well known. There's got to be, what? There's 10 men for every one female,
isn't
there?
I know, it's bonkers. But I think the females are taking over, and quite frankly, so they should. Do you know what I found interesting, right? I was reading this thing where Bradley Cooper, apparently in Hollywood they have this thing where they don't really tell each other what they're getting paid, because there is the difference.
Yeah.
And Bradley Cooper is now telling his female co-stars so they can make a better deal,
right?
So before they get contracted to a film.
It's another reason to love Bradley, isn't it?
Well, I mean I don't even care about that.
In your case, we're kicking an open door on that one.
Yeah.
but Meryl Streep, she was complaining about it. The Hollywood stars, the females don't get the same. We see it in sport, of course.
Yeah.
We see it in industry, and I suppose until there is equality in pay, we'll never have gender equality altogether. In some ways, it's a useful barometer of where we're at in equality, isn't it?
I think the other thing to mention is a lot of women, professional women in the 30s, when they're sort of careers on their own, they tend to take time out and have children, don't they? And then they get off the career ladder, sort of thing. So when they should be sort of jumping to that top level, that a lot of them, you know, are rearing children. That's an old-fashioned argument, but I mean, that's still apparent, isn't it?
No, it is. It is. It's still a reality. I've got to say. Meanwhile, very very sad story this week. Charlie Sheen, who went public over being HIV positive. It's been revealed how Charlie Sheen spent allegedly over $1.6 million in a year on prostitutes while HIV positive, as a famous madam says star paid extra to have relations without condoms and favoured pre-op transsexuals. I don't really want to get into detail about it. I think I already just have. The horse has bolted on that one. But I just wonder, Stephen, whether what Charlie Sheen, you know, it's certainly not a crime to be HIV positive, no. And we need to avoid any stigma around that disease. But Charlie Sheen, in some ways, I wonder if he's setting back attitudes to HIV by about 30 years with his alleged behaviour.
I mean, maybe, because there is promiscuity, isn't there, like, associated with HIV, which is not always the case. But I don't know, I feel for him, because I just think he seems a bit damaged anyway, like, regardless of this. And so there's a lot of me that really feels for him. So it's like, he shouldn't be pushing, like, HIV stigma back. Like, it shouldn't, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He's just one person.
Yeah.
So
and it's not a crime to get a disease, of course. But I suppose, ultimately, John, this seems to be, in a way, evidence of another celebrity out of control. Different rules if you're rich and famous, because what's being alleged is pretty outrageous, which is the allegation that he may have known he had this disease and used his money and power to continue having sex with people.
It's interesting that he made this disclosure on a big TV interview, and it sort of taps into the role of these big stars. It's like Lance Armstrong, when he, oh, a slightly different thing, but when he admitted all his drugs, so he did a big Oprah interview. But I think, I mean, he's
in that narrative of the narrative arc of redemption, isn't it? You go from bad guy to good guy.
But he's got a platform now. I mean, he's got all these thousands, millions of people know about him. He's got a platform to campaign about, you know, the issues around HIV, hasn't he?
Yeah.
But I noticed in the interview, it's all about him, what he's done. I mean, like, I remember the basketball player Magic Johnson, when he was a big campaigner, wasn't he, for HIV? So he could use that. He's got a platform to sort of campaign. And I mean, you don't really hear of HIV.
And didn't he only, like, come out about it because he was allegedly being
blackmailed? That's right.
So it's not very, like, there's not that. I just don't, like, he can't be a spokesperson. He's come out to save money.
It's also an allegation that he knowingly had sex with people whilst HIV positive. That's an allegation which it's highly possible that he denies, and we should sort of hasten to add that, you know. So there you go, a very sad story, and ultimately it's a tragedy for him that he has that disease, and we wish him well, and we know that that disease is not the life sentence that it once was, thank goodness. You're listening to Mark Dolan Eats the News, the very bipolar show today. It's serious and fun in equal measure, but it's great to have you listening. We're going to keep our French loving going. Here is La Belle and Lady Marmalade, Voulez-vous coucher avec moi? Which was, I think, Stephen's opening line last night.
Get me.
Eats the News on FUBAR Radio.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio, the UK's largest online radio station, unregulated and ad-free 24 hours a day at your service. It's 12:46 and I'm in the company of journalist John Reynolds and comedian Stephen Bailey. And Stephen, no doubt in the course of your work you spend quite a lot of time in hotel rooms.
Yes, I love it. I love getting a hotel. You get a clean bed in and you get a nice ready-made bed and there's tea and coffees and there's TV and I always think they have a really firm mattress, and then if it's worth its salt, there will be a breakfast.
You needing a firm mattress tells me volumes about your private life, and I can only be jealous.
So you should be mad.
I have no cause to check the mattress.
Sometimes when a lady is in a land that she does not know on her own, she needs to find a gentleman to keep her company in the free hotel room.
Well, definitely. There has been an expose by users of Reddit in terms of the strange things that go on in hotels. Reddit users were asked to explain the strangest thing you've seen guests doing, with current and former hotel employees admitting to finding human feces in the lobby. I'm sorry about that, guys. Guns, pornography shoots, deceased guests and trashed rooms. In the Reddit thread, a user named Lady Wug said a guest nicknamed Pie Guy would show up without a reservation and pay cash to cover the nightly rate and a $100 damage deposit. The next day, we would find his bathroom and bathtub full of the remains of several expensive pies.
Wow.
Okay, I would eat the pie.
I would eat the pie. What's he done with the pie?
Yeah, it's for the mouth. It's not for anywhere else in your
no,
way.
It's definitely not for anywhere else.
He never came back to the desk for his deposit, as he knew he wouldn't be getting it back. And there are all sorts of other strange things that go on. But, I mean, hotels, ultimately, I suppose it's one of those things that when you take a hotel room, you assume it's all kind of clean and fine and dandy. But
yep.
It's best not to think about what might have happened the previous night.
Oh, I never think about that. But I do think, I guess, because it makes us, like, I go to a hotel room and I take my nice silk burgundy pyjamas and I normally take like some sort of KFC takeaway thing, and then I'll get in the bed and I'll really wrap myself, you know, they always really tuck in, don't they, the duvet, so you can just slide in.
Yeah.
And then I'll put the TV on and I'll catch up on something that I've missed due to my gig. And then to me, that is really exciting. So I can understand why other people are doing other things. They just have different...
Well, I'm
a
proud father to two fabulous boys and a stunningly beautiful wife. But. And what's brilliant about hotels, about my work taking me outside of London, is that just settling down into a hotel room. First of all, I don't know what you think, John. I love there's real theatre when it comes to a hotel visit. It's the reveal. What's my room going to look like? And you swing open the door and it's either your heart sinks or your heart dances.
Yeah.
But either way, my heart always dances because it doesn't have any children or wives in it. Hopefully. Nine times out of ten. Because actually you have to pay extra for that. And it is just something about when you've got children and stuff, just having that space to yourself, which someone is then going to tidy up and clean. Waking up in the morning naturally.
Yeah.
You. And just thinking, okay, I'll go down and have a hotel breakfast and, you know, maybe enjoy the tea and coffee making facilities. I think it's a sublime thing.
I'm envious.
And
do you have much opportunity to use hotels?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of my worst hotel experience. The only thing I can think of was yonks ago when I went on my first business trip, was actually raiding the minibar and thinking that was part of the price.
Oh,
and then get a scarf for the bill
No.
The next morning. That was a schoolboy era, isn't it?
That's not pretty. Room
Don't
service
you prefer,
is always risky.
Like independent ones as well, rather than like a chain.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I love when you walk in, the independent ones, they always have that smell, and I always think that smell is kind of like, you know, when you used to be able to smoke indoors, they've not got rid of the smell from the carpet. Like, that's what it smells like. It's like
true.
That and a little bit damp, and it really makes me happy.
It's sort of comforting in a nostalgic
yeah,
sort of way.
Like,
the only kind of hotel that makes me sad is the hotel that doesn't do a breakfast. Because a lot of the modern chains, like your Premier Inns and your Travelodge, which, is, by the way, they all do an outstanding job.
Yeah.
But some of them haven't got any cooking facilities. And it's just something missing. A hotel without a breakfast, it's missing its heartbeat.
And I think one of those two, I don't know which one it is very insulting. Because you can pay like an extra like £6 for breakfast. And what it is like almost like a Happy Meal gets delivered outside your door. And you open it and it's like a cereal... and like an apple and an orange juice, like in like a box. And I'm like, that's so in, like, that's not what I wanted.
Now, look, I mean, I must say, as if I was a single man, God forbid, if I was a single man and also a man of considerable means, I would be one of those people that would happily reside in a hotel, John.
Yes.
One of my heroes is Peter Sellers, comic genius.
Yeah.
And he was so rich. And he could never decide which house he, because he had a flat in the Barbican, he had a sprawling estate in the countryside.
That was awful.
But he spent months on end just at the Dorchester in his favourite suite. And I think that's decadent and wonderful.
Yeah, me too.
Could you live in a hotel?
I could love to do that. I remember when Fabian Barthez, do you remember him, the old Manchester United goalkeeper?
Yeah.
I think he spent his first year living in a quite, well, not probably not a probably not a standard Peter Sellers hotel, but a nice hotel in Manchester.
Yeah.
So it does sound quite appealing, actually.
I think it does, I've got to say. Wonderful. If you've got any hotel experiences, at FUBAR Radio, dolan@fubarradio.com. We'll finish on a very happy story in what has been an unhappy week, which is the onset of Christmas. Yes, indeed. It's coming, ladies and gentlemen. It's a matter of weeks away. I think we're allowed to talk about it now, Stephen.
Yeah, I'm so excited. My mum starts talking about Christmas in January because she buys all the presents for the next year in the sales.
Brilliant.
So we don't ever really forget.
Who's going to be catering your Christmas? Does mum do it?
So normally, I mean, my mum can't cook. I mean, one year she forgot to turn the oven on for the turkey before she went to the local.
Jesus.
And so we had ham sandwiches with all the trimmings. That was my favourite Christmas ever. But this year my sister's just bought a house with her boyfriend, so they're doing it. I'm excited about that.
Well, I think it's going to be brilliant. Most of us find Christmas more stressful than a burglary, suggests the latest report. Follow these 15 ways to seize back the season and do it your way. Don't worry, I won't read all of them to you, but prepare early. I mean, Delia tells us to prepare early. A couple of top tips, because Christmas Day, it's all about the roast potatoes, and it's all about the Yorkshire puddings.
Mm.
So my suggestion, which is actually a Delia suggestion, which is that you parboil the potatoes the day before. Yeah, so that all you have to do on the day is slam them in the oven. Preparation is king. You can even make your Yorkshire pudding mix as well the day before and have that sat in the fridge. Beverage, shun the office party and throw your own. The annual office party can go one of two ways. You'll either end up too drunk from misguided quantities of free Prosecco, unable to focus at your desk the next day, or you'll be stuck making small talk with Graham from Accounts until dawn. We all know Graham from Accounts.
Bloody Graham.
The problem with Graham is he becomes increasingly attractive as the evening goes on. We've all been there. Hashtag Graham fail. Your Christmas party season, that's going to kick in quite soon, I would have thought. You'll have the Express, the Mirror.
Yeah,
My liver is just shaking,
yeah,
thinking about it.
Drinking. It's interesting what signifies the start of Christmas these days. Is it putting up the Christmas tree, or is it the John Lewis ad?
Yes, I know. It's true. The John Lewis ad is... Have you had a chance to see all of the different ads, and have we made a decision as to which one is the best yet?
I've only seen John Lewis and Sainsbury's, and... I'm a bit torn because I used to work at Sainsbury's.
Ooh.
And so I feel like I should support them, but I love the Man on the Moon.
You see, it's quite emotional. So also it's recommended to take a break from the turkey. This is sacrilege. This isn't going to work, is it? Cook something else for Christmas Day. Some people do a goose, duck, chicken, pheasant. Yeah. Oh, do you know what? I actually participated in the Come Dine With Me Celebrity Christmas Special last year. Hashtag just saying. Thanks very much.
I'm so
very good at blowing my own trumpet. And I must say, I cooked on that, and I did a Dickensian Christmas meal. And I started with a pea soup, which went down well, with a little drizzle of truffle on the top and some toasted cheese.
I would keep your pea soup away from me.
And then, as the main, we had a three-bird roast. And this is a bird within a bird within a bird. And it's a classic. And I did... the combination for me was duck, pheasant and chicken. And it sealed the deal.
Did you win?
I won.
Did you?
That's the first thing I've ever won in my life.
Oh, congratulations.
Yes, indeed.
So envious of your life.
Yeah, but the TV cookery show never came from it, which I was expecting.
I have a tip for Christmas. I have a tip for keep being stress-free at Christmas. Don't prepare. I think that's when people get stressed out.
Yeah,
it's when you're like...
Preparation.
Just do it. On the day, shove the turkey in.
Oh, is that right? And can you...
Buy frozen roast potatoes.
While we're here, and before we let you go, can you just take me through the chronology of your Christmas day? You will wake up...
So we wake up.
There'll be a bearded man in your room. Sheepishly moving his sack around.
Not sheepishly, he's really proud of it. And then we go downstairs and I go, "Mum, Dad, look, I brought another one home." And then my dad is like, "You're not invited next year." And then my mum's like, "You have to invite him, it's Christmas," and I gave birth to him. And then we have to pretend that Santa's not been for my sister because she's 24 and still doesn't, you know.
And is it basically 10 hours at the windmill and then ham sandwiches afterwards?
Yeah, and then every year my mum forgets one vital thing. So like I say, turkey was the biggest one, but there was the year she forgot the Yorkshires, that was a nightmare. The year she forgot the roast, that was a nightmare. So we had it with chips.
Oh God. Christmas fail. I tell you, about you? Now, where are you from, John?
Manchester.
You are Manchester. Yes. And will you be back up in Manx?
Stockport, South Manchester, with mum and dad and family.
Stockport.
Oh my God, it's all happening now.
Well, enjoy it. It's a heady mix of alcohol, presents, and family members shouting at each other.
Yeah, traditional Christmas.
There you go. Sounds great. My sincere thanks to the wonderful John Reynolds, freelance journalist, Stephen Bailey. Can you remind us of your Twitter handles, please? Because there will be fans out there.
John Eddie Reynolds.
There you go.
Oh, Stephen Comedy.
And he's put the comedy into Stephen all the way. It's Mark Dolan. It's Mark Dolan Eats the News. Vive la France. We'll see you next week. We'll play out with Paris. Great tune, great city. Thanks for listening. One day.